Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the November 15 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and from Atchison, Kansas, and Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, Mike Zuzulo. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, and there you can find today a way to buy your tickets for the Farm Assets Conference. That's Tuesday in Normal, Illinois. Should be a great event. All the details are there. I've been yakking about it for a long time, so you know who's going to be there, and the conference is worth coming to. You also know you've got snow on the ground and frozen ground at this point, so just make the trip into Normal, Illinois. $40 is a really good value. We start at 8 a.m. if you come for the conference deal with the corn growers in the morning. They've got breakfast for you. You don't have to tell them you're coming. It's just free. And then at 9:30, you drop out of there or thereabouts, and you come into the Farm Assets Conference. So tickets are Farm Assets Conference, willag.org, either one, farmassetsconference.com, or 800-898-1065. Pick those up today. Let's start with a list of things that maybe we ought to discuss for the day. I think, Mike Zuzulo, I want to get a list from you to begin with. What are the items that you've been watching?
I guess probably the biggest thing, Todd, maybe we should address, because there's a lot of calls I'm getting, I'm sure the other fellows are too, about the soybeans and how high they can go against this bearish report and what's driving that train. So that's probably the first thing to talk about for me.
How about from you, Matt Bennett?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the glaring one. And with that, you know, what do you do otherwise? You know, how much is the soybean market maybe going to hold back the corn market if we don't get positive news there? And so how do producers need to take that information and apply it to marketing for their corn crop as well?
And finally, anything that we add to the list from you, Kurt Kimmel?
Chinese corn numbers.
Ooh, let's start there. That's kind of fun. So I still have yet to air an interview that I did with Seth Myers, who's the chair of the World Agricultural Outlook Board, about those numbers. But last week, when WASDE came out with its November set, they included an updated list of numbers from China, and it was based on some numbers that China had released the day before, where they changed their production numbers. And boy, did they get bigger over a 10-year period. The trade, I guess, ignored them to some extent for corn, Kurt?
Well, a lot of analysts took the stance that we've always known about these large numbers, but nobody really wanted to talk about the large numbers, and they kind of dismissed them from the wordage, well, they're not a major corn exporter. And so if you throw those numbers out, we're still looking at a tight world situation than what we've been accustomed to in past history. But if you go way back when, there was estimates as high as 800 million metric tons of feed grain inventory in that country. And now if you do the numbers, we're talking, you know, a little less than 300 million metric tons. So they've done a big job of eliminating, using those inventories or throwing away the inventories that has gone bad, for say. So when you measure what they've taken out of the reserve, they moved over 100, 110 million metric tons since last April, which signals that they've basically got some strong demand for corn, particularly in that country. I think it's maybe a political statement more than anything. They were able to try to hurt the bean market by not buying our beans, but I think they might be a little frustrated that beans aren't a lot cheaper than they are now. And unable to hurt the corn market, I think they bring these numbers out and try to do some damage to the corn market. There's always been two sets of numbers, and the government numbers themselves they've never released. Then you've got the so-called public numbers, so they kind of show their hand where they're at. But when you do the math on these corn numbers, and do it in proportion. Even though they raise production, they also raise demand, and they also raise usage. So I think over time, though, this is still a powder keg in the world corn market if we would ever have a short crop either here in the U.S. or the Southern Hemisphere, Todd.
Yeah, just to give some context for people who aren't used to dealing with the numbers in million metric tons, the changes, if I remember right, and somebody correct me, it was something over 300 million metric tons in total production over the 10-year period. That left in stocks about half of it. And I want to say, let's see, so the corn in, let's see, it the corn in storage is more than 10 billion bushels, but it ended up with like a 5.8 billion bushel change or something like that. I forget in the stocks number when you look at it on the world on the world stage. So the difference between what China says they have and what the carryout is, and as Mr. Myers explained to me, for USDA's purposes, USDA's been using a much higher feed number. That didn't really jive very well with the stocks numbers, apparently. And again, I need to use this at some point and just haven't put it on the air. And that allowed them to really say, okay, we think our feed number was more online, and that this is the reason we went ahead and used these production figures from China, though we don't really think they have a very good handle on releasing accurate numbers. I won't say on whether they have a handle on the numbers themselves, but releasing accurate numbers. So that's kind of where we are. I don't know, Matt, did these concern you at all? Do they make much difference for you in any way at all?
Well, you know, if we would have come out with a number like most of us were expecting in the high 150s, you know, essentially with the production number coming down the way that it did and the carry number coming down the way that it did for corn, soybean production coming down, yes, the carry out was higher, but especially with the corn market, that was a pretty friendly report. You know, it just, you know, smelled of something poor, in my opinion, to be able to come out with that type of an adjustment here in the month of November. Several of us saw those numbers earlier in the week. Didn't dream in a million years, though, that the USDA would essentially handle this differently than what we'd seen them do previously. So it is concerning. To me, it doesn't really make a difference in the grand scheme of things because they're not going to be out there in the world export market. I agree with Kurt in that the bottom line for this corn market is that the Chinese are using a heck of a lot more corn than what a lot of people realize, and they don't look to be slowing that down anytime soon. And so, you know, who knows if these numbers are even true? I don't think anybody knows, and that's what's frustrating to me is for the USDA to bite on one set of numbers as hard as what they did, essentially changing the landscape, at least for the time being, as the trade indicated. As I said, I think you would have seen a double-digit gain in the corn market due to those production and carry numbers if we wouldn't have had that surprise based upon the world numbers.
Yeah, and the only thing to add to that is I think the trade also probably was able to get a little bit of tailwind from the idea that maybe China's doing this in an attempt to not have to import as much corn on the balance sheet because they've got that E10 mandate that's coming up within just about a year. I mean, you're looking at about a year and 1 month before you're at 2020, and they've got a lot of corn to grind to be able to hit an E10 mandate. And I think their E10 mandate is for real. I think the trade believes it's for real because their pollution between them and India, you just can't have the kind of health problems you're going to have in a country like China or India and still have that kind of economic growth that they're trying to promote. So I think that was another factor that maybe offset some of the algorithmic trading fears that I certainly had.
Wait. So what you're telling me is it part and parcel of what they did was they looked forward and said, boy, we got to have a lot of corn, but we don't want to telegraph that out
right
to the rest of the world. So we're just going to tell them we have a whole lot of corn on hand.
Yeah. And I think this brings up the point. I remember a long time ago, Kurt and I were doing a panel meeting and he talked about the great grain robbery in the wheat market back in the 70s. You know, we've got to be watching for that because what Matt was talking about as far as the actual numbers, I can't believe USDA took that at face value given where we're at with our trade issues and didn't do a little bit more homework and saying, okay, let's verify this. Let's make a note of it. And maybe we won't take all of it, but let's verify this before we throw this into our numbers.
Can we talk about the bags of corn that are hanging around all across the United States landscape at this point, and maybe what that might mean to basis, if anything at all, and when it could come into the marketplace? It's different, I suppose, than commercial storage to some extent. Matt Bennett, have you got any thoughts on that particular item?
Yeah, we talked about this earlier, Todd, and, you know, there is a ton of corn that people have found alternate storage, if you will, without taking the plunge on storage. Bottom line was historically wide basis. Most people realize that worst thing they could maybe do was take that corn to market right away, take advantage of the carry in the market and wait on basis to get better. You know, the basis has already gotten better in the areas where harvest is wound up. And so what's this mean long term? I think that, you know, the farmer, if he's tight-fisted and willing to handle this appropriately, I do think that this can be a good reward for the producer. I have to think that over the long haul, basis is going to improve, although I do think you're going to see times whenever basis is going to back off because there is a significant amount of corn that's going to have to find a home at some point. But it's definitely changed things somewhat. I do think, as I said earlier today, there's actually more beans in a few of these bags than what people realize. It's not all corn, but the predominant majority, I'm going to say, is corn. And it's definitely changed the way that the market is looking at this on-farm storage, if you will.
I don't think there's a whole lot of difference, Mike Zuzlo, between grain bin storage and the bags, at least in the way USDA is going to have to count it in the December 1 stocks report. But can they get a good accurate number, do you think?
I don't think they can. I had just gotten done looking at a story on Bloomberg about North Dakota elevator holding 2 million bushels of beans in plastic bags. And I think it was a little under double of what their total amount was last year between corn and beans. I think you've got a real issue here in figuring out. I'm like Matt, I think you've got a bigger situation with the soybeans in the bags versus the corn at this stage. I would say one thing. I think if you could get the ethanol market to turn around and go higher and stop being pulled down by the negative margins, which is in greater part due to the RBOB market just falling. I think you've got a real good chance of seeing some upside potential. I've noticed today when I looked at the basis in Tuscola, it's improved about 23 cents for spot corn versus mid-October. York, Nebraska up about 15 cents since the 1st of October, and that's with a pretty strong firm futures market. I'm inclined to think that the trade thinks that there's going to be another yield cut in the January report. I'm in that camp. I think we might be able to get below a 1.7 billion bushel carryover. So I'm significantly more nervous about producers getting beans sold on rallies, and I'm less concerned about the cash corn market, especially with the wheat market finally coming around. And even the ADM global grain guy or global trade guy was at a meeting, I think today or yesterday, and talked about how the U.S. is poised to pick up quite a bit of wheat export business. So I think corn's pretty strong. I just wish the ethanol would do a bit better.
Hey, Kirk, can you follow up a little bit on any of these thoughts? But I'm interested, and I kind of wasn't thinking about the difference between bags of corn in the West or bags of soybeans in the West and maybe bags of corn in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Yeah, Mike and Matt were dead on here, and I think the biggest plus was the crop was dry as it was. It gave the producer some confidence to go ahead and put corn and beans both in a bag here for a short-term fix. And basically, I don't think the commercial trade expected that. I believe that helped take the edge off, and that's why we're seeing the seasonality of the basis kind of snap back the way it is. And when you look at the bids on out, we're following the seasonality of seeing some improvement into mid to late December. And I think that's our time window. If you're one needed to move some grain, that's where our best basis is going to occur. The guys I visit with, they talk about moving this grain here by first of the year as we move into the new year. And so I believe after we see the calendar turn 2019, we're subject to maybe the widening of the basis again as these bags are cleaned up here through the countryside.
Okay, so I want to follow up with you, Kurt, and then maybe the rest of the guys can jump in, Matt and then Mike, with a question as it's related to cash needs before the end of the year. And let's say you're going to have to deal with two situations. So let's say that the end of the month meeting between President Trump and President Xi goes well. Which crop do you market for end of the year needs, corn or soybeans? And is that different if it doesn't go well?
Well, most guys are fairly well sold up on beans. And so any type of positive news out of the trade talks or hope of some positive news, I think you got to take advantage of it because we still have a lot of inventory to move. So the biggest thing here is the corn. Guys elected not to sell a whole lot across the scale on the wide basis and elected to store it. Some hedged it to capture the carry-in through here. So if there's still some carry in the market, you can look at selling the deferred there and trying to pick up a few more cents there. But corn and beans both, I think we've got the December window time frame here to get to where you want to be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have any issue with that. I guess the way I look at it, if it goes well and a producer is still sitting on soybeans, you know, not everyone in the country had phenomenal beans. I understand that. But especially those producers who had a solid bean crop, to me, it's been a fairly easy decision to just to look at the numbers, how it affects your profitability. If you had some of the yields that we saw, adding the 82.5 cents to start with, and it appears a relatively good chance to get another 82.5 cents. But I still think that if we get some sort of a shot in the arm from this meeting, that it could be something that doesn't stay around forever. I think over the long term, it's a good thing by all means. But you know, what are you going to take the 955 million bushel carryout down to on soybeans? I don't think that you take it down more than a couple hundred million bushels this marketing year, personally. But I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. If it's bad news, I mean, I think the same thing probably applies, that I would be maybe a little more excited about just going ahead and saying I'm done with the soybeans. I think when you look at the grand scheme of things, as far as the cash market's concerned, you know, a 1.7 or below, and I would agree with Mike that that could happen on corn as far as carryout's concerned, to me is a more friendly cash situation than a 7.50 to 9.50 carryout on soybeans. So I would want to do like Kurt said and sell the deferred, wait on the basis to come to me on corn. I think there's opportunity there to maybe manufacture a little bit more than maybe what I see as far as the soybean market's concerned.
Yeah, I like that idea. I will say two caveats. I think the soybeans, either way they go, Todd, with the talks, I think they're still probably the better of the two to sell, and wouldn't change my mind much, because I think we're already starting to factor in some of the improvement between President Trump and President Xi at the G20. And I don't like that. I wish we would get a hard deal, because it reminds me of what happened when we were close to NAFTA and then it was pulled out from underneath us. And I think that happened two or three times, and it really made for a nasty market. I would do probably both almost equally if the talks go bad, even, because if we get a market like Matt was talking about a minute ago, that how much could beans hurt the corn? I think you have to wonder about that if the talks go badly. And if your cash corn gets back to pre-harvest levels and you're back to profitable levels, I would probably do some of both with more emphasis on beans. One thing I do worry about is we won't get that second 80 cents if the talks go well, because of the shift since the midterm elections in political parties. I saw another news story today that USDA is going to reevaluate that in December. And I'm just real nervous that that's just not going to happen now, because we've had such a big shift in Washington.
Kurt, I have a question about South America for you. Yesterday, during the closing market report, and that would have been Wednesday, Drew Lerner was talking about some flooding issues, maybe a lot of rainfall in Argentina. It's very, very, very early in the season. I don't know that the market cared very much. But what do we know in general about both the Argentine and Brazilian soybean and wheat crops?
Well, as far as the moisture goes in Argentina, there was some concern, maybe still some more concern about the wheat as far as quality. issues. The worst time of the year to have ample moisture around when they're starting to move into wheat harvest, trying to get that crop out. But, you know, the Southern Hemisphere as a whole, they were very aggressive on putting beans in. They're way ahead of pace by as much as 20% on the average of getting the crop in the ground. Now, whether or not that reflects some early harvest or not, we'll see here after the first of the year. But that's the concerns of the Southern Hemisphere on beans. Too much moisture doesn't slow them down or cause some issues such as fungus or rust issues, they're on track to here to have a fairly good crop a little earlier. And the concern would be that the boats would sort of bypass the U.S. and be lined up in the Southern Hemisphere to take on that crop. We'll have more crop updates as we move forward that the crop's still being put in the ground. And the Southern Hemisphere is a huge, huge growing region from north to south. So there's always going to be somewhere that's going to be too wet, too dry, too hot, too cold, Todd.
Matt, is there any early indication as to the decisions farmers have made about next year's crop mix and whether there's much of a change?
Well, you know, there's obviously been some chatter about different return on investment whenever you look at corn versus beans. And I do think for the first time in a few years, there's going to be a little more enthusiasm to plant corn back on corn. In our part of the world, we're hearing of a few acres here and there. I don't know that you're going to see the mass switch that some people have forecasted previously, but I do think there's going to be some acre switch around. Now, when you get outside of our area, for instance, into some of the areas of Iowa, the Dakotas, Minnesota, that have had a rough fall. I've heard from several of those producers who've told me that they flat out couldn't get any groundwork done. They've read maybe a little bit of commentary from me suggesting there would be increased corn acres, and I guess they've called me on it, at least in their part of the world, saying they just don't see how it's going to happen unless there's some sort of a opportunity that they're not seeing because of to date they just simply couldn't get any fall work done. So I think in parts of the U.S. that typically would be very heavy corn on corn areas, whether you're talking northern Iowa into Minnesota, I think some of these areas may not be as heavy corn on corn as what some people presume that they were going to be. So I do think you probably pick up 1 million to 2 million acres of corn, but I just can't see anything more than that, the way that this weather has evolved here this fall.
We've gotten to that point in time where some will start to consider new crop sales and whether they should or should not be made. Matt, I think I'll let you follow up with that on your discussion of acreage, and then we'll come around the horn with Mike, followed by Kurt.
Whenever we look at new crop sales, I guess everyone wants to be maybe a little bit friendly to corn. And I think there's been a lot of reasons to do so. But I have to, be a little bit concerned with producers passing up a little bit better opportunity to start with. I know a lot of folks started in the mid-390s last year up into $4. And we've been over $4 several times here just lately with Dease 19 corn. A straight hedge somewhere in there isn't a bad place to get started. Am I still thinking that we could have better days for the corn market? Yeah, I think so. But bottom line, I definitely want to get started to a degree. I mean, we started with 15%, I guess, on my farm. As far as the bean market goes, I think protecting anywhere in here above 935, 940, at least doing some price protection is probably a solid thing to do to get started. And by all means, if a person's willing to either set some floors or maybe do a risk reversal at a higher level than today, whether it be 950, 960, 970, I would put those offers in now, because there's no telling what kind of volatility we could see around this meeting that we have coming up. And again, it might be very short-lived.
Yeah, I'm very similar. I'd probably set a target maybe closer to 415 in the Dease corn. I'd like to see a 965 Nove bean price and continue to scale up sell on that. And if I get 965 Nove beans, I think I could probably get 415, maybe 420 on the Dease corn. That's where I'd probably start on 19, Todd. But I would probably be going back to what the other guy said about the carrying charge in the bean market. I think we really want to be invested in the idea that if we do a lot of selling here in December, November, December on price targets being hit, don't rule out the idea that we can have a South American weather event come back in and spot in some re-ownership with some March calls or bought calls, sold puts, and respect the support lines if you take on those sold puts. So I can give more details on an individual level, but I think being re-ownership, coming in once or twice this year, can help improve, I think, the net selling price and get us closer to what we've been used to the last 4 or 5 years. But just following up on the Purdue people put out their crop cost and return guide, and on high productivity soil, they're dead even on corn rotation and bean rotation. And now that we've had the Bankers Conference in Omaha and the Kansas City Fed put out their agriculture outlook in terms of what's been happening in the finances in my neck of the woods, I think you'll start to get a lot more serious about what your rotation will be, and you'll hear a lot more out of the financial side.
The problem, the forward cash sales on new crop, is I still see a wide basis. So we're 5,500 on beans, 4,100 on corn, so it's kind of tough to pull the trigger with that wide of a basis there. But it seems like $9 cash, or Matt indicated 9:30 board, you know, start scaling into it and look at maybe some type of hedge until the basis narrows up for the most part. If you want to get adventurous, something to look at is selling an $11 November soybean call option for 20 cents. The only way that's wrong is if beans go to $11, and as long as we stay below $11, you'll collect to 20 cents. So that's one way to try to get the market to go up in a sense. Corn-wise, we started putting some hedges on at 405. We scale up sellers, 415, 420, 425, just kind of put some hedges in there to have the market shoot for. Then we've been kind of covering those with some call spread options. So if we do run into some weather issues as we go through the growing season, you've got some staying power and not get spooked out with a margin call or two. So there's a lot of creative situations to get started on that. It's just a matter of working with someone that you're comfortable with to explain this. But, you know, don't give up such wide basis. But I think Matt really touched on something there on this weather issue. He's correct. There's not a lot of work being accomplished here this fall on ground. And our weather source that we follow has over 227 years of publication experience is showing a wet spring. So be a factor here as we move into next year.
Hey, Matt, outside markets, whether it's the crude, the Dow, the dollar, any concerns for you with any of those three on a global or domestic front that might be worrisome or on the flip side be very positive?
Well, the crude oil market obviously has taken it on the chin of late. It's been pretty tough to watch. You know, and by all means, it's going to be really hard, in my opinion, you know, to be able to rally corn a whole lot when you're seeing the crude market dip the way or plummet the way that we've seen it do so. You know, as far as the dollar, I mean, we've definitely seen some strength there, but you know, it's going to be interesting moving ahead. If we continue to see strength in the dollar, I think that it's certainly going to play in. But by all means, I still think that we're going to be fairly competitive in the export business. I know that the dollar can have an impact there. I do feel like the corn exports particularly are going to have a real opportunity, because I think we're going to be one of the only games in town, if you will, for a while. It'll be very interesting to see, you know, what kind of crops that we do get out of the Southern Hemisphere, because my hope is that we'll even exceed the USDA's forecast for exports. I'm not going to say we're going to. I'm saying my hope is that. And if that does happen, and if something would happen along with that, like Kurt's suggesting, a wet spring, I think you could see some interesting times for the corn market.
I think the only thing to add to that, Todd, is I did a webinar on the inflation side of the equation for commodities yesterday for clients and subscribers. And I kind of feel like that we've got a window of opportunity to break the dollar down and to put a low in the Chinese currency. I would hope that would happen, or would forecast that to happen between now and the end of this month. If it doesn't, then the cycles and the seasonality and quite frankly, the momentum would probably continue to work in favor of the dollar going higher and creating more headwinds for us in the first quarter of 2019. But I think we're in a real key time period here when it comes to the dollar against the Chinese currency specifically. And I don't like saying this because I don't do this type of analysis, but it's getting to the point where it seems like the dollar and the Chinese currency make up about 80 to 85% of what the commodity markets do on a weekly basis, just because copper and crude oil are trading so closely with one another and they're so attached to the hip with the currency markets. And so this, we're in one of those time periods where if we could divorce and break away from the current trend of a stronger dollar and weaker Chinese currency, I think that'd do a lot to bring some commodity investment in, because I think the economic indicators are still pretty inflationary.
Hey, Kurt, anything to add in the outside market influences? And I would include in that maybe African swine fever in China or other livestock issues, or if you want to follow up with the financials.
Well, on the financial side of it, the main thing is investor confidence, consumer confidence. We don't want the consumer to get spooked in here and not to continue to buy red meat or spend money in general. As far as the dollar, I'll meet Mike halfway on that. I think you did a good job of targeting different countries. When you look at the dollar index itself, it's kind of hard to get too wrapped up in that when we need to look at China currency particular, or the Southern Hemisphere, the Brazil and Argentine currencies, to kind of keep things straight in proportion to each other. As far as the swine fever in China, I think that's kind of huge in through here, as meat consumption is going to, be a factor on grain consumption in general. And I think that's something that'd be noteworthy as we move forward.
Time for a final word from each of our panelists. I believe Mike Zuzulo will start with you at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
We had this seasonal push up, and it's kind of a counter-seasonal push up in the soybeans with the 9.55 carryover. And since then, the trade is smoothing out in its mind, the U.S.-China relationship. We have a soybean harvest that's dragging about 500, 550 million bushels still left in the field. And we've got a cooler, wetter South American weather pattern in some key regions. And it's starting to match up with an El Nino winter or summer and what they're talking about. However, the meal and crush margins are not performing well. We had a record NOPA crush on Thursday, and the crush margin went below a dollar and made a brand new one-year low. This tells me we don't have the fundamentals underneath us to keep this market going higher from a supply-demand standpoint. We're relying upon headline news, and as you brought up a minute ago, I don't like the African swine fever at this stage. So scale up, sell on the soybeans, come around to the corn.
Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds.
Well, I think, there's a lot to think about going in here to the end of the year. Are we going to, how patient is a person going to be? And I still feel like, with cash corn, I do think that those bushels that you have at home, I would want to have the carry locked in. But absolutely, I do think there could be more potential as long as a person's patient to reap a little bit of a benefit from the basis. And I think whenever I look at new crop prices, I'm definitely wanting to at least get started. I think producers should be setting some targets. If they're not ready to at these price levels, that's fine. Set some targets, put them in place. And by all means, if you think that there's a chance we're going to get some sort of a bump out of this meeting coming up, you're not going to get anything sold if you don't have an offer in place. So I would go ahead and get your offers in place and hope that we get something to happen of a positive nature.
And Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, Matt. I think we're in the business of managing risk. And like you say, stay patient here. There's going to be some opportunities to lock in some profit, for say. And I think you got to keep your marketing plan flexible so you can shop around for the best cash bids out there. Now, for those who are interested in what's the best day to wash windows, floors, or castrate hogs, you're going to have that opportunity to ask Pete Manhart at the Farm Assets Concert, because I'm going to send this information with him. In fact, we might have a giveaway so you can stay on tune what's the best day to do things.
Oh, that is a deal. Thanks so much. Of course, Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You can listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like online at willag.org. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, along with Mike Zuzlo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. The Farm Assets Conference is on Tuesday next week. If you've not purchased your tickets yet, still can. FarmAssetsConference.com, WillAg.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.